It's Wednesday, February 15th, 2012, and you're listening to episode 258 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 1 minute. So, Wayne wrote, this is from an idea that Chad had with my own spin/wording on it. Player styles and how to manage different player styles as a GM. You have the number cruncher, the hipster gamer.
Hipster gamer.
The various in-between at your table.
Such a pejorative.
And I would add, too, that you have the guy who wants combat, the guy who wants role plays, the skill guy, the social guy, the wheeler and dealer, the let's discuss it versus let's break down the door. There's all these different
Any of the above or combination of the above.
Exactly. How do you, as the game master, keep them all happy, and how can you cater to them before going outside of your GM style? And I'm going to add another caveat onto this that Wayne doesn't have, which is, and keep the game cogent.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's not 1,000 micro episodes.
Well, and see, that was kind of the point that I had made that Wayne had filtered out when he boiled down the concept was...
When he flushed, that part was gone.
Yes. you're sitting at a table and there's a whole bunch of people and they have all different things that they want out of the game. How do you cater to those things without, A, turning the game into this mess?
Right.
And then, B, without selling out your own experience and getting what you want out of it, too?
I've got three words for you. Round one, Eric Okra.
I have three different words for you. F*** them all.
That's right.
Chad, let's kick back several campaigns to the one that at least comes to my mind as us having perhaps the most disjointed group. And I think there's actually two I could use. So I'm going to pick this one first. And if we exhaust this one, I'll jump to the other one, which was an Apocrisis game that I was running where you really latched onto a part of the setting where there had been kind of this transhumanist past that had sort of, by this stage of history, become passé.
Right.
But you were a leftover from that. You were a tech guy. Versus you had Wayne, who was exploring this kind of confused racial identity because he was a human-alien hybrid thing.
He was a space bard.
You had...
Yeah, he was.
Pat, who was...
I was the only one playing the character that you wanted people to be playing in the game.
Yeah, you were playing...
End of story.
Ex-soldier... Small craft pilot. Dave was playing basically the inheritor of this business. Mm-hmm. You had characters that were all across the board, both in backgrounds and desires. I mean, they had a cogent group template in that you guys were all working towards one common goal, which was a successful salvage business with an interest for intrigue and other plots. You were all friends. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, you had rules people versus non-rules people, action guys versus talkers, hot shots versus cooler heads, the money man versus the risk taker.
Yeah, you had
the
risk
averse, I guess I should say, versus the risk taker. How did that play out? Where did it go right? Where did it go wrong?
Well, you had the differences on a lot of different levels. I mean, there was, like you said, there was a lot of different kinds of characters, and that's differences on, I guess, what we'd call the group template level or the story level.
Right.
And then you also had differences in, I don't want to say mechanics, you know, what the expectations of mechanics, but just what the expectations of the game part of it. You know, you had people who really wanted to deep dive into their character sheets and get into the mechanics and get into the combat aspect of it, or at least optimizing the combat aspects of it. And then you had other people like myself who just wanted to get into more of my story and my background and who I was, not represented by the characters.
Which is amusing because you ended up being the power gamer of that game.
Oh my god, my character had racked up the highest body count of anybody, even the soldier guy. Yeah. I was on a murdering rampage.
I think part of the reason there was the soldier guy, because he was now civilian, did not have his soldier gear.
Yeah.
But you, as the
tech guy,
there were still computers and robots everywhere.
Yeah.
And so you were really able to flex muscles that Pat simply lacked the hardware to flex.
And there was a couple of situations where the combat characters get faced down with bad guys, I guess. Combat NPC. You put them into combat situations where they didn't get pinned down or bogged down, but they got mired in that,
right,
so to speak, which was a good thing. They were able to scratch that itch. They were able to do the combat thing. You knew that my character, or not my character, you knew that me personally was not into that, and we kind of arranged it. Nothing where we were like planning this out and, you know, really delineating how this would go down, but you kind of made it to where my character wasn't involved in that combat. In those situations, I was kind of to the side. I was kind of outside of it. And when they got mired in that, my character was able to come in and save them, so to speak, or at least not save them. Save them the wrong word. Take the pressure off of them.
Contribute.
Contribute in a way that wasn't taking a gun out and shooting somebody in the face. I was able to come up with a plan, think around it. I was able to role play it out, which scratched my itch. So their itch is getting scratched. My itch is getting scratched. And it just so happens that my scratching my itch also blew a whole bunch of guys out an airlock and
killed Frontier.
Yeah, into the final Frontier.
Well, and let me note there that I think that coalesces around the first concrete piece of advice. One of the things I'm a big believer in is, just like in real life, I think in a role-playing game, most situations should have multiple solutions. Mm-hmm. You can talk to them, you can shoot them, you can sneak around them, you can not be there in the first place, you can run away, whatever. But what this brings up is the idea that a problem can have multiple simultaneous solutions.
Right.
Here's what I mean. These guys are involved in a firefight, okay? I'm just making stuff up, but let's say that...
That's all we do.
Wayne and Pat, their characters are behind cover with their rifles and pistols trading shots with somebody. There's reinforcements on the way.
Avalanche of dice.
Now, I don't want to split the group up. I don't want to shine 10 spotlights at once, because that creates all these incoherent micro games I'm trying to avoid. But what if Dave goes into a nearby restaurant and fakes an emergency to draw off some of the responding security guards? And at the same time, you, Chad, go into the system and you hack something to confuse them about where the emergencies are occurring, and then send in a robot or two to relieve them. And all of a sudden, the diplomatic approach, the combat approach, the technical approach, these are not three different stories. These are one story that I think, not to strain my arm and pat myself on the back, but were enabled by the fact that I wasn't stopping everybody else's action. It wasn't like, okay, Wayne and Pat are in combat.
You two Chad guys and Dave, sit there and do nothing while we do Avalanche of Dice.
You guys watch Simpsons while I get through these guys. It was like, no, it's like, okay, they're pinned down. Pat comes back to you guys, hey, this is what's going on. What do you do? Mm-hmm. And the answer may be nothing. The answer may be I draw my own gun and charge in to help them.
Right.
But the answer could also be, hey, I am going to use what I want out of this game. Mm-hmm. The social approach, the technical approach, the economic approach. Hell, I'm going to find the captain of the guard and bribe him to have his men walk away. You know, there are so many different ways of solving this. At the same time.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the one I see most often, and what's frustrating for me, is the, okay, you'll arrive in three rounds. That's not a solution to anything.
And sometimes that's necessary for the sake of any amount of fairness or realism. You're across a 3 mile wide station. You ain't going to be there next combat turn. But I think the game master should give the players some way to contribute.
Give them an option. I mean,
hell, it's a high-tech game. You know what I could say? Is, look, these guys are all carrying, you know, personal data pads and sensors. You, even if you're not in the combat, at least are able to see things they're not distracted by because they're getting shot at. If you give them advice over the comm unit, I'll let you roll some kind of tech skill each round. And if you're successful, I'll give the guys in the combat a bonus to initiative. Or if they fail a roll, you could advise them that, no, don't do that. Try a different action. And if they're willing to switch actions, they get a brand new role.
Now, I guess the point is that I just want an option.
Exactly.
I don't want it to be, okay, Chad, you will be there within three rounds.
You don't want to
be
sidelined.
I want it to be, Chad, what are you going to do? Are you going to run there, or are you going to try something else?
And see,
and give him the option before you say, if he says, I'm going to run there, then you tell him, okay, three rounds.
To back that up and to support Dan's pro GM party here, unfortunately, a lot of this onus has to be on the player, too, because as a GM, there's nothing I hate when I'm trying to set this situation up where, you know, it's like I maybe have some mechanical combat going on and then somebody wants to do some roleplay or whatever. And I look at a player and I go, OK, what do you do? And they're just like, well, I'm across the station or I'm separated from the party. I really can't do anything. I don't know. And they roll their eyes and they're like, I don't know.
Game Master needs to step up. I am agreeing with you that that is weak sauce on behalf of the
player. If the Game Master isn't presenting any openings, I don't think the Game Master should necessarily have to present, do you do A, B, or C option? If the Game Master isn't presenting openings,
right,
then it's the Game Master's fault. If the Game Master has presented openings and the player is just, oh, I don't care. You know, right. There's nothing I can do.
You're sitting
it's just like, dude.
You're sitting in a pastry shop on the outer ring of the station. You know this is going on. As it's going on, you see the captain of the guard and one of his sergeants outside, and they appear to be pretty confused and flustered. They're like looking over a data pad.
And even
if you're the social guy and you don't take that opening,
yeah,
you're dumbass fault.
And even if the Game Master either doesn't present openings to you or the openings are just something you don't want to do, don't be afraid to make your own openings.
Or
you could even ask the Game Master, I'm separated from these guys, I want to do something, can you throw me a bone here, what do I do?
Yeah, and the Game Master should also remember, if the person doesn't know the setting, they may not know
options. And that was certainly an issue in Apocrysos, because there's a few points you guys had to ask me. What's legal? What's technologically possible? What's socially acceptable?
I've been thinking about this, and I don't know if you were going to plan on going here or not, Dan, but I think we're sort of getting away from catering to different styles. But
sure.
The spin that I want to take on this are two things I wanted to mention. The first would be this. If you have a particular GM style and you're trying to cater to these other styles that are not yours, how important is it to try to have this amalgamation, this conglomerate of all these disparate styles that are, say, different than your GMing style?
Well,
I mean, how do you approach that? See,
I think I
know the answer for some people, but I mean, what
I approach
should GMs
that
do?
All the time, every time I sit down in game, because my style is the minority. You know, it might work for a little bit for some people, but it's not really there for a lot of people. Like you, Pat, you want crunch. Yeah, I wouldn't call you a power gamer by any stretch or anything like that, but
he's an engineer.
Yeah, exactly. He's a math major, an engineer. He wants some crunch. I get that. I don't want a whole hell of a lot of crunch. That's not my thing. The avalanche of dice is not something that tickles me. But I know it's there. When I game with John, John is a gamist. He wants rules. He's a lawyer. The rules are there for... He's not a rules lawyer. He's a lawyer who likes rules. And, you know, the rules are there for a reason, and you stick to them. One of the ways around that is I ran a D&D 3.5 game, the one that we had been talking about for the past couple of months. You know, how did I run a D&D 3.5 game? Well, I did two things. One, I don't know the rules. I haven't read them. Don't know them, get the general gist of them after playing for a few months and seeing them. John, with the help of Dan and Pat to a certain extent, ran the rules. I ran the game, we're talking, we're role-playing, the plot's going on like this, this is happening. I attack the guard. Okay, everyone roll initiative. What do we roll for initiative again? And then John starts marking that stuff down. He has everybody roll, and then he's calculating two hits, he's doing hit points. I know enough of the rules to where I can kind of stat out some stuff, but it's not real, real deep. I also use some tricks that you guys didn't see to kind of make it appear that the enemies were statted out when really they weren't. And we got through the combat, and it was fine. And your guys' itches were scratched. You got the combat. I didn't have to run it, so that was fine for me. But I still had the sort of narrative control over the combat. It's like a pinch hitter. I was running the game. John, for the most part, was running the rules of the game. And it wasn't a problem. It worked great. It offloaded work for me as a GM, which is really the whole theme of that campaign, was me offloading work to you guys. And it also allowed John to really get his rules on. It allowed you guys to have tactical combat that you wanted, and it was great. It wasn't a hot mess of an amalgamation of stuff. The second way I did it to kind of get what I wanted out of it is that I was always trying new things. I was trying like the RTS, the city sort of RTS things with the blocks, and just different little things that I had thought of or I'd found in different games that I threw at you guys, but I didn't make it the main thing of the game.
You know what, Chad? What you're describing is my answer to Pat's question, which is you've got to meet the people halfway. That if they want a game that is not your typical gaming thing, you as a game master ought to be flexible enough to at least step a little out of your boundaries. But you also have to know yourself. You have to know, look, I can't run this kind of game, or I'm not going to enjoy running this kind of game. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be some line in the sand you draw. where the players have to be equally compromised and say, okay, Chad is the example we've used before where the gnolls were coming up the hill with torches. And I'm like, gnolls have dark visions. You said to me, look, if they don't have torches, you guys won't see them. It ruins the moment. I said, they have torches. They perfect. Have
to,
you know, I met, you know, it's like we met each other halfway. Yep. It's like you said, yes, they have dark vision. I'm not retconning that. But if they don't have torches, the whole setting, the whole scene is ruined. So like, OK, they have torches. Don't even know why. They're cold. Doesn't matter.
They're trying to make helium.
These are the torch gnoll tribe.
That's how they identify themselves.
Well, Chad and I had an interesting conversation on the way over here where we were discussing the GM styles, basically like we did the last episode. And one thing that kind of came out is that very different for me, I strictly follow the rule with my NPCs. I limit myself because I'm trying to tell a better story, and I tell a better story like that. Chad approaches it a completely different way. The end goals are the same, which makes me wonder, in a lot of cases, if you're looking at these different player styles, maybe you can present the exact same thing, but meet what different players are trying to get out of the situation in a different way.
Well, actually, Wayne, I have a thought that I think might be along those lines. Before I get to that, Chris, what were you starting to say?
The nice thing for you guys in the situations that you described is that the level of trust that's between you and individuals within that group, I think really helps a lot in getting that. When you get into a situation where you've got somebody who really, really likes crunchy rules, and you may know the rules to a certain degree or not, and they want something and you want to try and meet them halfway, but yet you still have that fear that they're going to end up taking advantage of you. You know, that's happened to me where somebody has just kind of abused the rules. They didn't meet me halfway, and they really kind of took advantage of some of the rules or my lack of knowledge thereof. I wanted to give them some of the stuff that they wanted to fulfill and scratch that edge. But, you know, you have to be wary of being taken advantage of to a certain point. And maybe that's just a discussion you need to have with that player. Say, look, yes, I know that you have better rules knowledge than me. I'm happy to try and give you what you want to an extent, but you got to cut me some slack here. Don't screw me.
I actually have two ways that I would approach that. What you're saying about how if you, Chris, have like a player that if you gave them that level of control or in on the game, they would screw you over to your advantage. One, I don't really want to be friends with that kind of person.
I'm with you. To expound on that, Chad, and Linda, let you continue. In this coming game, that's a discussion I'm going to have with John, for example. Say, look, I don't know the rules. Explain the rules to me. If I'm about to do something obviously wrong,
John will absolutely do that, because like we're playing a Pathfinder game where I run it. I've never even cracked the book on it. Pathfinder, he runs the rules.
The same thing. I'm saying, look, just pretend I'm a new player, except I'm the GM.
Pretend I'm Chad.
If I'm about to do something stupid, be like, Dan, do you realize if you do this, this happens? And I'm like, oh, crap. No, I didn't. But go on.
But sometimes I wish the GM would do that for me when I'm playing a system that I don't understand, because I've made some really stupid mistakes in the past and had no idea that it was a stupid mistake.
Wayne, the likelihood of a Thunderbolt kicking your cockpit in was extremely low.
Well, no, that wasn't the case at all. It's in previous games.
You don't get embarrassed by that. You roll with it, and those are what we call house rules.
Or learning moments.
But the second thing I would do, the more actual proactive thing I would do, is you have a person who is willing to cheat or to bend the rules to where they get the advantage and they win. I guess I would look at that and go, what are you trying to achieve?
Right.
What do you want out of this game that you are not getting, that you are willing to go to these lengths to get? Maybe we could dial back those extra links that are making us uncomfortable and give you what you want. Maybe just not give it to you, but we can make that happen. I mean, people sit down for a game. They're sitting down because they want a specific experience out of the game. They want to scratch an itch. And if somebody's cheating, or if somebody is bending the rules or doing something that we don't like, it's because they are trying to scratch a particular itch. And instead of stopping the behavior, you can go to them and say, what can we do to scratch this itch? You don't put any value on the cheating. There's no purpose to it. There's no point to it. But you do it in such a way to where you just don't hand them anything they want on a silver platter. You do it in a way of saying, how can we give you what you want and make the game better for it? How can you we give you what you want and bring the whole group into this?
You know, not just in the issue of cheating, but I think in the issue of
anything negative.
Styles well,
yeah,
in general.
Cheating is not specifically what I'm talking about. Yeah. But it's basically using the rules to your advantage over somebody else's knowledge. And I think that approach, Chad, I think really is a wise and sound way to look at it.
What do you do if you have two player styles that are just completely opposite of each other? So, for example, Pat and I, we love leveling. We love getting Aaron Stack's petty little victories. We love that. We love stuff. Chad doesn't.
Let me just build on that a little bit before you guys answer. What I have seen more often than not in groups is that you will have the most vocal or needy or, dare I say, whiny player that just has to have things done their way. Essentially what happens is the GM will cater to that individual.
See,
and that style that they want is what is presented to the group. And everybody else just goes along with it, not to rock the
whatever. I will confess, I will throw myself under the bus. In the early days of gaming, especially Battletech, or early Battletech campaigns, I let my brother run too much of the game. I was catering to him far too much. And it just so happened that there were enough people in the party that liked the same thing that it worked out okay. But there was a point where a guy who was a friend of a friend joined us for a game, and he rightly observed, this is not a game about a group. This is these two playing. He was right. I mean, at the time, I kind of ruffled my feathers, but in retrospect, he was absolutely right. I think there's one thing that I would say that would respond to some of this, at least a little bit, which is, I talked about the GM and the players meeting halfway. The players compromising with each other, the game master compromising with players compromising with the GM. But one thing that I use as an analogy to describe a lot of things in my life, and I may or may not have used this on the show, I don't know, is that there are two kinds of gray. If you hand me a box of Crayola crayons and say, color this sheet of paper gray, I can either take the gray crayon and I can color the whole sheet gray, or I can take the black crayon and the white crayon and create so many white and black dots that when I hold the picture several feet from your face, it appears to be a solid block of gray. I think that distinction describes two ways to harmonize a game. If I get a guy who's a rules guy and a guy who's a story guy, then I can say, okay, let's find a system that's rules light. Let's dial back some of the rules. Let's only use certain rules for certain situations. That's type one of gray. I'm coloring with a gray crayon. If I have a game where there's one guy who loves combat and one guy who loves a social, well, then one guy gets pinned down and the other guy socializes with the captain to talk him out of sending reinforcements. Once again, one solid color of gray. But if I get somebody who's a total power gamer, who's cheating on his rolls and after the stats and thinks this is a competition,
either.
I mean, this guy probably needs a strong talking to, if not injection from the group, which is my group. But
bye.
Yeah.
See you guys. Never. But,
you know, this is where I think you can bring out a second kind of gray. If you can say, and Chad's talked about this with the shifting spotlight in the past. Let's talk about our D&D campaign where I was playing Gnarl. Chapter one was going to be about Pat's character. Now, things happened to Gnarl. Things happened to Sir William. Things happened to other characters. But the gist of it was Saren. Chapter two was going to be about Sir William. Once again, things happened to Saren. Things happened to Gnarl. Chapter three is going to be about Gnarl. Now, the point
Sorry, here, we never got to chapter three.
Well, it's okay. But the point being here that what you were doing is, sure, there were moments you were coloring gray, but through a lot of that campaign, somebody shows up and all of a sudden we realize a piece of Pat's old castle has been built into some new guy's castle and we don't know why. Look, Gnarl and Sir William may have opinions, but it's not about us.
Right.
You took out that crayon and made a white dot. But then all of a sudden, we have these empty lands and I took the initiative to tell you, Chad, hey, I'm going to build a keep over here and start calling Knolls. You said, great. Let's roll and see how the Knolls feel about your leadership and how many you're attracting. You took out that black crayon and made a black dot. And in that method, over the course of the chapters, we had a sheet of gray paper. It was just built a different way.
Right. So are you saying that Chad is a French Renaissance painter?
Yes, I am saying that Chad is a pointillist or whatever they were called.
Ooh, I like pointillism.
You know that the people having the picnic on the grassy hill? Yeah.
Yes. I just keep thinking dot matrix printer.
Yes, when Chad GMs, there is this And like the whole room shakes from right to left as the printer head resets itself.
And then I go, what if then Pat's got to like roll me up because there's a jam. And
And then when the banner comes out from Print Shop Deluxe, it's hard to hang up because it's stretched across multiple pieces of perforated paper. Mm. And it's just, you know, a whole mess.
What about if the two player styles completely go against each other, though? You've got the guy.
Example.
Okay.
Yeah. Because two examples. We sit here and my player style is really different than Dan's player style, and we get love Dan.
What are two that are oil and water? Okay, cannot mix.
I have two examples.
Okay.
The guy that only speaks in character and the guy that refuses to speak in character.
Been there, done that.
Also the guy that's focused on immersion versus the guy that's the class clown and wants to make jokes about everything. In both cases, the other style is actively interfering with the style that the one player wants.
I think your second example is a little more clean, so let me deal with that one. Because with the first one, I think you'd say, they may just learn to ignore each other. But if you have one guy who's really into immersion and another guy who won't stop breaking the fourth wall, that's a completely different animal. All right, is it presupposed in your example that the two will not compromise?
Yes.
They don't have to compromise in my game. They have to learn to live with each other. I always talk like this and it's my accent for my character, then everybody else needs to just deal with it and accept that. But then the other person who never talks, never uses a character name, never talks in the first person, never does any of that. My character does this. My character says
this. Well, that's why I think Wayne's second example is a more clean one. Let's say that we're playing a game and I'm really into it. Okay. I'm really into my character's head. I'm really caught up in the moment. I'm hanging on every word you're giving me about plot and setting. And the jackass next to me, and I point at Pat, I don't know why.
I have no idea why you would point at Pat.
He's actually never done this, so I don't know why I pointed at Pat. But, like, they're looking at their phone, reading off sports scores and laughing at the Simpsons, and I don't know what else. I mean, if neither of them will compromise, if one guy won't cut the other some slack, the other guy won't knock his crap off, I don't know there's anything you can do. I mean, Wayne, I think there is a simple truth about reality.
It's called the dome of IC.
Well, it's called don't be a dick.
Well, I mean, but everybody gets distracted, and I think that it's that's on the game master.
Dome of IC works for people that want to be
Bingo.
IC.
Wayne's saying,
not every gamer is a gamer
Wayne's
that wants
saying,
to be an IC.
Let's suppose this is not a moment. This is your style. And I
think your style is to not be involved in the game.
Bingo.
Then why are you here?
Because maybe you like certain aspects of the games, like you like pushing the minions around, you like doing the combat, you like talking to people, but you really don't want to play.
You like joking with your friends. You can be
some people.
You can
just
be
inspected.
Role playing
is beer
not
and pretzels
a,
to you.
Role playing is not. Well, listen. If you take it casually, if you don't take it seriously, that's one thing. That's fine. Right. I've had players like that who want to hang with their friends and who don't really get into character.
Right.
They don't really like the dicing part of it. They don't really like the Mitch part. But they want to hang with their friends, and they're geeky enough to hang out with us. Cool. I give them a character, or they make a character, and guess what? I'm bouncing the spotlight around. I'm bouncing the spotlight around. Spotlight doesn't get put on them. Or if it does, it's just very short. Hey, what do you do? I go with the group.
And I don't want to debate the tree here, because Wayne's porous, I think. Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. If that person is just hanging out, making jokes when other people make jokes, out of character when other people are out of character, when something intense is going on, they let it go on, very respectful of the game. I've had players like that. I don't have a single problem with it. If the player is being disruptive and you have talked to them and people have talked to them and they are disruptive is not a play style. Disruptive is not an itch that needs to be scratched.
Well, and even if we take disruptive out of the picture, I think there is a reality that I've seen in interpersonal relationships, and I think it's just as true in gaming. With the vast majority of people,
sometimes they need a good beating.
Well, yes.
That's true.
Even that aside, I have a comment that's a little bit less harsh. There are some people that no matter what you do, they just ain't going to get along.
Right.
It's just best they go their separate ways. We have had people in this gaming group who we have had to eject because they were a problem.
Right.
We have also had people who were nice people. I love and respect. I have nothing personal against them, but the game they were after is not the game we were playing.
Right.
And while it may have been harsh or hurtful or difficult or awkward or whatever, the best thing for everyone involved was for us to say, look, you're not a bad person.
It's just a square peg in a round hole.
It's a square peg in a round hole. this is just not the group for you.
We spend so much time talking about group template and making sure the characters fit together. There's nothing wrong with looking at the group template of your players and see, do your players
looking
fit together?
Looking at a circle of friends template. I absolutely agree.
I mean, it sucks to think about people like that, but if your group doesn't gel and no one's having fun because of it, maybe it should be two groups.
It's so way easier said than done, though.
Oh, it definitely is.
Because, I mean, we talked about you have an established group and you're trying to bring a new player into it. Well, you take the person out. It's like, let's go to dinner. Let's talk. You can meet everybody and you can see if we gel. That's so dehumanizing. You're doing an interview for a group of friends. And
there's a lot of
it's
things
like you're trying to find a new couple to swing with or something. It just.
Yeah. well, thanks, no, I Chris. Did not disagree with that. So
I don't know what I'm talking about.
But it's okay. We can cut that out of the final feed.
Yeah.
It's just Chris.
But it's just so hard to say. It's like, oh, well, we're going to analyze to see if these people gel. Again, yeah, that's great to say. That's a great idea. It's a great idea. We need to know if these people will gel, if the game will work, if we're all going to have fun together. But in actuality, that is taking an analytical approach to friendship, and that's dehumanizing, well, and you shouldn't do
and
it.
It's and also usually that. Neither one way or the other. Maybe these two get along great when one guy's GMing, but the other's not. Maybe one of them GMs and the other loves their game. I mean, there's a lot of other factors that can come in.
For the sake of you guys listening at home, obviously, this episode has stretched on long enough that by now we are in the second part of what was originally one episode. I do want to explain, just as a side note, that you're going to have lost one voice because Johan had to go home to deal with some family stuff. So, as a result, we will continue the episode right from here. You're just not going to hear Johan's voice registering equally on every mic. So, if you've ever interviewed someone for a job, you've probably learned that the hard way. Someone who seemed like a great candidate at the time just had quirks you didn't know about. Or, you know, maybe the reverse. Maybe they came across like a total douche, and upon getting to know him, it's like, wow, this is a really great guy. And you know what? Certainly there are some things you can filter out in that meeting, but they have limited usefulness. But I do think there is some value in at least presenting to people up front, this is the kind of game I am running. You can tell me this is the kind of game I want. We will see if there is a way we can meet halfway in good faith. And if there is not, then maybe it's best that one or more parties just sit it out for a while, or maybe sit out completely and go find a new group. I really appreciate what occurred earlier in this episode, which is now last episode, what Johan did, where he said to me, you know, look, I want to make sure I get the character I want. Where are you going with this? Either way is fine, but I'm going to play a slightly different character based on what you tell me. I gave him that answer. He has now found a way to get the most out of his character within that game. And so I think certainly, Wayne, your point is absolutely right on that. Just as you have a group template to set forth the expectations of the characters up front, I think there is no harm in having a less formalized but equally important process by which you set forth an understanding of what the game is, and you set forth sort of a template, not for the characters, but for the game itself of, this is the system, this is the setting, this is the feel, you know, this is what you're going to get and not get. And the game master should be open to somebody saying, you know what, I just can't do this. Can we tweak this or modify this or consider something completely different?
One thing we also always talk about is player GM communication. When you deal with these styles that don't mesh with players, I think the player-player communication is even more important in that point. Let's say I'm the one joking around and, you know, I make fart jokes in the middle of trying to, you know, when Pat's really getting into his role-playing, I need to know that that's bothering him. Otherwise, I don't know there's a problem. Pat just soldiers on and doesn't say anything to me. I may have no clue. If Pat, you know, tells you about it as the GM later, but it's never mentioned back to me as the player. Again, I have no clue. I think a lot of times players do things that bother each other or interfere with the fun without that communication happening because everyone's afraid of hard feelings.
And I think that is very good intention, but I think it's difficult in the execution because I don't disagree with you that if something is bothering a player that another player is doing, it definitely should speak up. But sometimes it's difficult to do. You're afraid of, you know, hurting feelings. I mean, you don't want to call the guy or something if it's gonna, you know, if it's gonna bother
well you don't
but you know it's difficult. And so I think from the other side of that coin is that players also say, you know, hey, You know, yeah, I'm making fart jokes all the time. Is that you guys, if it's bugging anybody, I'll be happy to stop a little bit, but, you know, just let me know.
A little bit.
Well, you know, as an example, a while back, we were talking about being a player that's more vocal and things like that. And I was talking about the superhero game that I was doing the actual play with. And I was worried that my character might be too over the top because he was a comedic character. So I did exactly that. I talked to everyone. I was like, hey, have I crossed the line or is this still fun? And I universally got an answer of, yeah, this is one of the things that's making the game. So I knew that I wasn't crossing that boundary. But if I hadn't have said something about it, I would have never known what other people felt about that character. You know,
and similarly, I think there's something else that players can do to accommodate each other's style, which is check yourself before you wreck yourself.
I can't disagree.
Because
you best check yourself before, lest you wreck yourself.
Let me give an example from one of the games we played with Gnarl and Taren. Gnarl, being a gnoll,
that was a great love affair.
Was very, very opinionated, very unafraid, was always out front.
God, sounds so familiar.
I knew that if I played that character that way all the time, he would never leave space for anyone else in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that was not going to be fun for Wayne or for Pat. And so I wrote a character who recognized he was not the social front man, and therefore going into a social situation, Wayne needed to lead. That's just the way the pack works. And he felt, in a sense, subject to Pat's character. And so whenever there were decisions that had to be made or negotiations that had to be made, he would not speak at all unless Pat directly asked him a question, or he would invite Pat to come make a decision, say, well, somebody's asked me something. I have to go basically get my boss. He had a gnollish word for that, but I'm going to go get my boss. And so I knew what my character would do to the group. Yeah, and that's what I'm really getting at here. Mm-hmm. It's self-analyze. You know, sit down and say, okay, let's presuppose you're not a total moron or totally egocentric. All right. And I realize, unfortunately, the former or latter is the problem person in most groups.
I think we're also presupposing that you've played a game with this group before, too.
Yes, and yeah. I realize that fact. But if you have, and if you're not a moron, and if you're not egocentric, sit down and say, look, how is my character going to impact the group? What is it other people want out of this game? If you don't know, because you're new to the group, or you just don't know what they want of this campaign, guess what? Magic three-letter word, ask. Hey, what do you guys want out of this game? Yeah. And adjust your character such that you can get what you want. And I got to play the gnoll I wanted to, mm-hmm, with his unabashed, no fear warrior ways without squeezing Sir William and Saren out of the game. I can say the same thing, for example, Chad, in our current Battletech game with you playing Jiro, where you had several interactions with people that came from Asian cultures and, mm-hmm, you understood the cultural nuances in a way that they didn't. But you said, okay, well, I have to come and do the pleasantries. Ultimately, mm-hmm, the people that run this mercenary corps excuse their barbarian ways,
yeah,
but they must come in their own impolite way, negotiate with you.
Mm-hmm.
And nonetheless, I mean, while it was framed that way, you brought them into the action.
Right.
And, you know, you conceded the spotlight so that their play style could work.
Because I've been a game master. And I know that, right, that one person hogs all the spotlight. If you're the combat guy,
just that once, yeah, can't you leave your gun in its holster? If you're the negotiator, can't you just that once pull your gun out and shoot somebody because you've had it?
That's why I still support every single player needs to game master, even for just a little bit, so that they can understand how a scene works and that it's not about you and the spotlight. That's great when it happens sometimes, but the spotlight is really cool when you can share it with other people, right, or that you can grab it for that little bit, and then you as a player can move that spotlight onto someone else. That's when it really gets neat.
We talked about this on the way over, too, and I think
it's like
on the other
GMing.
Yeah, I think on the other side of that coin, every GM needs to be a player occasionally.
Yeah.
Because I think you can lose touch with what it's like to be a player, and I think that, you know, you need to expose yourself to other GM styles. And if you're always the one running the game, you're not going to experience another GM style. Other people that could be GMs at your table aren't going to be able to grow as GMs.
Mm-hmm.
And you just will eventually lose touch with what it's like to have be playing
up,
for someone else.
Die, you'll turn to dust and just get blown away.
To Waterloo.
Waterloo.
You don't want to get blown away there. You might want to get here, but you may not get blown away here. You know, Dan, you had you had mentioned one thing earlier that I think bears a little bit of repeating. When it comes to, I think the term you used was a template for the game itself, and asking, what do you want out of this? Or as the GM, what do you want out of this? And trying to get some answers out of this. Because I think in the example that I pointed to earlier about the whole power gaming thing and abusing some of those rules, in that situation for me, that was actually a missed opportunity by me. Because my player did ask me at one point, am I going to have the opportunity to do this? I didn't really give him a very good answer. Because I think at the time I didn't necessarily know. I did eventually kind of give him what he was looking for. But I don't think he got his fill out of that. And so then we, you know, kind of devolved into that situation that was there. But it probably was a situation that could have easily been avoided had, you know, we discussed a bit more beforehand. What are the individual goals we're kind of either do we want to see in the game or are we looking for in the game? To completely hit the brakes and turn 180 and go back in the other direction. Recently, I've been fortunate enough to find people to play Succession Wars with. And for those of you who don't know what Succession Wars is, this was basically it's Risk for Battletech. It's grand strategic wargaming, where instead of individual battle mechs, you're basically sending entire units and conquering whole regions, and it covers the entire Inner Sphere game universe. And it really is a lot of fun to play, because although military conquest is good and definitely a part of the game, there is kind of an unspoken diplomacy side, which really is where the fun in the game lies. And Chad illustrated this perfectly at FearTheCon 3 when he played, and he barely fired a shot, but really ended up winning the game through nothing but diplomacy and backroom deals, which was fascinating to watch.
Oh, sure. Now you remember you've gamed with him.
See, but that was wargaming, and that wasn't necessarily actual role-playing. I didn't get to see Chad delve into being a character.
I'm always a character.
That happened in the beer line.
Yeah.
When he was making that duel with House Marik or Steiner, whoever it was.
Like, hey, I'm a little thirsty. Wanna go grab a beer? Sure. So, guy, let's talk turkey.
The game was made back in the late 80s, and it was quickly, they stopped making it. Partially, I think, for this reason, is that the rules are so...
They're a little dense.
No, they're non-existent. It's actually the quite opposite. They contradict themselves, and they have wide open gaps for interpretation as to exactly how these rules can be interpreted. So you have a rule set which is not solid by any means. So... in this recent play-by-email game, I actually finally got to sit down with a player, and since I haven't necessarily played the game, I got to find out exactly how lousy of a player I was, as opposed to someone who just kept running the games.
Well, you are terrible at diplomacy.
Well, you know, no, I had actually, before I got my ass greased in this game, I was actually cutting a number of deals to really help stymie this guy, which actually worked pretty well, and I kind of feel bad for the Davian player, because I bought one of his cards from him, and in the end, I still got completely taken over, so he's never getting his money back from me. But
victory?
So
good job.
You're now living like a billionaire in the French Riviera, like all the smart dictators.
Well, yeah, actually, you know, I'm actually in the deep periphery living. Katrina Steiner's hiding out as the Red Corsair again. But anyway, the problem that developed here is that in my final demise, we got into a rules debate discussion in regards to how some of the rules were interpreted and how we had originally, before the game started, decided to interpret these rules and questioning whether or not they were necessarily correct. And there was some intricacies with playing by email and how rules and commands were given and whatnot via email. What happened was the guy who was running the game, he just up and quit. I think he felt a little bit jumped on from a couple of sides about rules discussions, and he just decided to just up and quit. It wasn't necessarily an argument. Nobody, I don't think, was taking a very argumentative tone, because we were just kind of discussing the fairness of whatever or not of the rules, and then he up and left. So I guess my question is, A, what do you do when a situation like that arises, and how is it best to avoid the situation, or to at least minimize the impact of the situation? Is it really fair to just accept the GM's ruling point blank?
Let me ask you a question here. which is, are you talking specifically about war games? Are you broadening this to role-playing games, or is this both?
Well, you know,
because I have different answers for each.
Well, I think you could broaden it to role-playing games, but the genesis of this comes from the fact that we were playing a war game, a board game.
I think what I would say regarding a war game is because of the fact that a war game is so much less subjective than a role-playing game, it is about the objective rules, mm-hmm. the objective in a different sense of the word of the game. You know, you're trying to conquer this hill or take over the galaxy or
there's
whatever.
No narrative hand.
There's no narrative hand. Yeah. Exactly. I think you have to accept the rules. And I think in a game like that, especially where the rules are so poorly constructed as they are, you have to accept that part of playing this game is if you have a guy who's not playing a faction, is not bestest buddies with one of the factions, and is therefore, okay, at least conceivably generally fair, you have to accept their ruling, even if it makes no sense. I mean, if the rules say they're wrong, that's one thing. But if the rules are unclear, even if what he's saying seems to go against the spirit of the rules or the intentions, if the rules do not black and white say he's wrong, because if that was the case, he's cheating, then I think you have kind of implicitly, by joining this game, accepted his or her dictates. So I would say, yeah, you just accept it and say, you know what, it sucks, but look, I mean, they're sacrificing something by agreeing to run this. The rules weren't clear. A decision had to be made. They made a decision. If you have any questions like that, I mean, I know, Chris, you have some experience with succession wars.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some of those questions need to occur up front of, hey, it's not clear about what happens when X and Y both occur when Mars and Venus are aligned on the third Tuesday. What are you going to do in that situation? You know, or maybe even get a sense of, hey, what kind of game are you looking to get out of us in general? But I think once you're in that situation, you've accepted them as the arbiter of the game. Now, I'd have a very different answer for role-playing games, so I'll pause on war games and see if anyone else wants to comment.
Well,
here.
You know, and I do want to say, and that's why I kind of feel bad about the fact that he quit, because that's exactly what I did. I mean, I said to him, I said, yep, look, I'm out. I lost. You know, I got totally outplayed. I'm fine with that. I said, but this situation that we didn't foresee at the beginning, you know, may occur again. You need to make some sort of decision on this. I said, I'm out. I know, but you need to make some sort of decision. And I know that I don't think it was necessarily just me that caused him to leave. I think there was because of the other guy who was also coming at him. But I completely agree with you.
Yeah. And, you know, and part of that is, look, whether it should be true or not, there's something that is true, which is communication is 50% what you said and 50% what they heard. And I know in that situation, it is very easy because I've been there myself and I've been guilty of this myself, that when somebody questions you and really what they're trying to do is defend their stake in a game or maybe even raise what they feel is a legitimate issue. I mean, who knows what? You feel like you're being told you were wrong. You feel attacked. And it is very human to become defensive. Now, I don't know the situation, so I don't want to judge this guy. Okay?
I would say in this case, it was even worse because it was a play-by-post.
Well, and I would say that I'm not sure I would agree with the reaction of walking away. But I wasn't involved, so maybe it was merited. I have no idea. I don't want to judge this person
because right.
I don't know. But at a first blush, hearing only this limited part of the story, walking away does sound like a bit of a severe reaction. I think while you guys implicitly agreed to abide by their decisions, this person agreed to stick it out and make decisions. And if it's news to them that they would have to make hard choices or unpopular choices, I question whether they've ever run anything before in their lives. And once again, I'm not judging because I'm being honest with you, but I don't know. Okay. So if this is someone who listens to the show, I'm not bashing you. I wasn't
bashing him.
Well, now he's going to walk away from the show.
Yeah. Well, if that was the case, you. No, I mean, seriously, I don't know who this person was. I don't know why they walked away. Okay. I don't know the situation. Maybe they were getting attacked on all sides. Maybe they were getting 100 ugly emails from people that Chris just didn't see. I don't know. All right. But having repeated that enough times, if I was to take this to a role play,
covered? Good.
Covered as it can get. Somebody will hate me anyway, but you know what?
Them. Haters going to hate you.
So, all right. But here's the thing. If I was to take this to a role playing game, I would have a different answer because in a role playing game,
it's a lot softer.
It's softer in that you have a narration that can sometimes usurp the rules.
Mm-hmm. Perish the thought.
You have a party who, depending on the game, But in most games, shares the common objective of survival and success, whatever exactly that means. And I realize there are competitive games, but generally are on the same side. And so you have a lot more room to wave your hands and to accept some things. I didn't mean like jazz hands or whatever I meant.
That's what gaming needs more of.
Jazz hands.
Boy, you ain't kidding, buddy.
That's how we keep things more quiet at FearTheCon this year. Instead of any kind of applause, I just want people to do the little finger twinkle thing.
Finger twinkle thing. I don't know. Occupy FearTheCon.
Occupy FearTheCon, anyway, yeah.
So
I hope people occupy FearTheCon.
I do too.
I'll give them free beer. They buy tickets.
Yeah, and you know what? If you want to stay there after close, it ain't my problem. The cops can come and get you. So the point of it being, I think in a role-playing game, you can at least stop and have a different kind of conversation of saying, okay, Game Master, why did you do this? Game Master, I know what the rules say, but look, I really like this character. I'm fine with you setting me back. You know, I accept I screwed up here, but can we work something out? There's a little bit more wiggle room because you have this narrative, you have the shared common objective of playing a game where everyone wins by having a good story versus a board game where one guy wins by kicking everybody else's ass. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the huge distinction that I would draw. I think you have so much more wiggle room to fix this in an RPG.
You know, and I'm not sure about anyone else, but for a board game, I would actually say something about it potentially. With a role-playing game, I don't think I'd ever say anything about it because I don't want to be seen as the rules lawyer, and I don't want to second-guess the GM. But I don't want to undermine the GM.
I take issue with that, even as the president of the pro-GM party. I take issue with that because here's the thing. Part of what I want out of a game as a game master or even as your fellow player is for you to have the best time possible. And if a call got made that was maybe even completely fair by the rules, but is not what you wanted, you know what? The rules can go and screw themselves. And you know, because let's go back to the Battletech game.
But the rules are the rules. And if you're not going to follow the rules, why even have the rules?
If that is your gaming group template,
it's not.
So be it. That's your gaming group template. That's not ours, okay? Mm-hmm. But if that's your gaming group template, so be it. But Wayne, I remember in one of our very recent games, last game or second to last game or whatever it was, this Battletech campaign before I went on a work enforced hiatus or a reverse sabbatical.
workable?
Well, I don't know how you conjugate that word to flip it, but anyways.
Workable.
A workicle. Anyway, that was going to be obscene and really offensive. But the point being, though, that when you got your cockpit kicked in by the Thunderbolt, everyone was like, oh, damn. And it's like, you know, do you have anything to reroll? Well, you don't have any edge. The floating Beethoven I was allowing for super rerolls was in my possession. It was not in a player's possession.
And I see you didn't use it to save your player.
Well,
his player didn't want to be saved.
But yeah. If you recall, I stopped everyone and said, okay, hold on. And I said, Wayne, look me in the eye. Are you okay with this outcome?
And then he slapped you in the face.
And you said yes. Yeah. And I said,
I had never had a character and die and I wanted to experience
and
it.
And I said, are you sure? If you don't want to accept this, I can put this as he kicked in the cockpit. You're badly injured. You're going to need some recovery time. Hell, maybe I'll even open up the MechWarrior Second Edition book and give you a permanent injury.
And see that?
But you'll survive it. And you said to me a second time, no, I want him to die, and here's why. And it was only at that point
and
that I declared you dead.
And we all agreed, too. See,
yes.
We all agreed at the beginning that on the map,
yes,
we will have player death. It is sudden death, and if you don't have the edge or the whatever to stop it, you're dead.
Well, you know what? But sometimes things sound a lot better on paper than they do in reality. Well,
and I'll just go along and say that some people agreed more vehemently than others. There were a couple people that were just gung-ho about, oh my God, I want to die on combat.
I disagree, but majority rules. It had to be a unanimous decision.
Yes, it was a unanimous decision because the majority of the people wanted it. So I'm like, I'll go along with it. That's my feeling.
Well, I mean, it was a unanimous decision. If you didn't want it, we wouldn't have gone with it. But if you went with it because everybody else did, that's something you're going to have to live with.
And I am living with it. I'm just saying, devil's advocating the fact that just because you've got a hard and fast rule like what you're talking about, because things can change, it may not be that everybody was just
maybe
had
you,
a on for being killed in combat.
Maybe when you agreed to, you didn't realize how attached you get to a character.
Yeah.
And I am not a believer in the whole caveat emptor line of thinking. I can't say you're wrong, Chad, because you're right. People did agree to it. It's just my personal internal conscience is not real big caveat emptor, you know, buyer beware. Wayne did sign the dotted line, but my number one job as a GM is to make sure he, along with everyone else, is enjoying the game. And so I had to stop and say, okay, look, the rules say you're dead, but you know what? The rules are not the objective of this game. Not for me. I love rules. I'm a rules man. I am not a Chad-style GM in that regard. But the fact is, I will happily throw the rules under the bus of fun every single time. And that is why I wanted you to tell me several times in a row, yes, I'm not just saying this to not rock the boat. I really am okay with the death, and here is why.
Yeah, I found the best way to deal with that is instead of the unanimous agreement and everybody has to go with it, because you get like what Pat is feeling, where he kind of feels socially pressured to agree with it.
No one wants to be the party pooper.
Necessarily agree with it. What I've found works with something like player death, this could be any social agreement with any game, doesn't necessarily have to be character death, is that it's actually okay to allow it for some and not for others.
Yes, I agree.
There does not have
to be one size fits all for anything.
You have a couple of people who are really gung-ho about they want player death and they want the game to be very on the edge and very real. And you have others who are like, oh, I put a lot of time and effort into my character and I don't want to see him get popped.
And that is exactly...
That's okay.
You just described me to a T because that's the way I am. I just don't like it when my character dies because I become pretty attached to a character and I put all this work into it and establish
and
all
like,
these
Black
relations.
Leaf,
and
for, no!
And then for me...
Black Leaf, no!
Right. Well, and just for me, it's like, okay, we've been through all this.
He'll hang himself
We're
from a rope.
6 months into a campaign. We're 6 months into a campaign after all this work, and now I'm going to start from scratch with these people, you know, established. And that's, you know, and other people are fine with it. You know, Wayne, you were cool with it. I know you would be more than cool with it. I know John would be.
I think John needs it. The game lacks
John,
meaningful risk and reward.
Yeah, John is, John's a different animal. But, you know,
I get it. I wouldn't want it in every game. Right. I wanted it in this game because I've never experienced it.
So let's go back to Chris's question here, and let's apply it to a role-playing game. Let's say that you had a situation where a contentious point came up. You guys disagreed with me. I disagreed with you. There was some kind of split group over this. And basically at this point, I say screw it and walk away. Obviously, the best outcome is don't be so much of a hard-ass douche. Negotiate it out. Everybody explain where you're coming from. Listen to other people. Seek compromise. If all else fails, let everyone take a week off, then reapproach the subject like we did with Gnarlgate. You know, let heads cool down and then come back and deal with it and find a solution. But let's say, just for the sake of argument, you have a situation like Chris described in Succession Wars, where one party is so upset, so alienated, so immature, maybe, I don't know, once again, I'm not going to judge the party, but has some issue so big, they're just done. And they walk away. What do you do? Do you continue the game with one of the previous players now GMing? Do you say, you know what, if we ditch a player, we also lose a PC. The group loses its cohesion, so maybe we're better off starting a new game. I mean, I realize there's no one-size-fits-all answer, but how do you decide what the appropriate solution is?
For me, that game is then tainted, and I'd rather just start a new game. Start from scratch.
I think
it depends on if you're talking about the GM or a player.
Yes,
if it's a GM that walks,
I'm talking about the GM.
Well, and my answer is kind of that I really kind of think that you abandon the game and start something new.
I think it kind of depends on the game. I mean, I've had some GMs where the game is kind of blase blah, generic, you know, it's okay, and the GM doesn't want to do it anymore, leaves. And I think that another GM could make the pitch to me saying, listen, I think I can do a better job. I got a lot of ideas where I can take this. Everybody's into their characters. Let's see if we can get this running.
Here's where
he could sell me on it, I'd be fine.
I'm with you. It'd be an uphill sell for the reasons that Pat and Wayne gave, that I think by this point, the game feels tainted emotionally. The group template may be broken. It'd be a bit of an uphill sell. But I think the game master could sell me on, I can still pull this game back together. Here's how we'll phase my character out. Here's how the group template remains coherent. Here's how we keep all the pieces moving. I would not want them to NPC their character because that's just begging for a Baron von Badass.
Eh, I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Well, it depends on the GM. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
But I would not put a one-size-fits-all on it. I would certainly...
I mean, if they're going to Baron Von Badass their own character...
They'll do it with the bad guy anyway.
Yeah, they'll do it anyway, yeah. So...
Well, except
matter.
For the fact that they may have built history and therefore investment in that character. Chris, what about you? You talked about this from a war game standpoint. What's your take on this from a role-playing standpoint?
I think it comes down to a case-by-case basis, and a lot of it has to do with the nature of his departure, you know, and how it did kind of affect everybody. If someone wanted to try and jump in that chair and take over and have their PC phased out and everybody, you know, felt okay with it, I'll give it a shot, see how it goes, you know, or if they all decided, you know, like Wayne said, we better let's just start over, you know, and if that just kind of really felt like the way of doing things, well, then, you know, let's do the things. Or, you know, a third option might be if everybody wanted to start over or someone to start over, but, you know, another one was like, no, I really like this character still. There's still a lot I want to get out of this. All right, well, then let's end this campaign. The group breaks up. We'll come up with some sort of story-based idea why they did that. And then if you want to keep your character, go ahead and keep that character, get you together with a new group, and let's pick up on a different adventure with at least with that one or two of the same PCs with new PCs in there.
That's a great approach, Chris, that if somebody had a character they like, but the story or the game feels tainted, approach it as a reboot. They yeah. maybe were going to say, okay, something happened to this party, you know, after so-and-so left. You just come up with some kind of hand-waving narrative and then say, okay, who wants to play the old character versus a new one? And we're going to keep the continuity, but kind of reboot it a little bit. Instead of rebooting, we're now about to deboot. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. This is the second part of an episode we recorded in one sitting. So I do want to at least close this out by reminding you guys to check fearthecon.com, get signed up for events, create some events. Mm-hmm.
Keep checking the forums for the Ivory Tower on the Borderlands.
Yes, game. Ivory Tower on the Borderlands, or whatever we end up calling it. You guys have a great week and great games, and we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.
Cool.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.